You know, I guess the first thing I wanted to ask you is how UCSD helped you, you know, develop this great company and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's my actual thesis work was mm-hmm. was more in integrated optics than in, mm-hmm. in integrated electronics. Mm-hmm. But the core value of an education is not in the knowledge you get, it's in the discipline approach you use to solving a problem. And I think, you know, we were talking earlier about what we call the UCSD optics mafia with, you know, I mean, Bob Aiken's one of the best entrepreneurs in the city and Rick Sandstrom. And, you know, there was just a core people. And I think it was Paul or somebody said, you know, gee, what's the element in common? And a lot of that was Sing Lee. He was a very tough taskmaster. And he insisted on, you know, to complete to the end a line of research. And if it wasn't done, it wasn't done. And, you know, there were many, many graduate students working for him who felt, boy, other people are getting out, you know, and Singh wouldn't sign off on us until the work was done. So I think it was really that discipline that we got from, largely from Singh and from the whole infrastructure of UCSD that eventually I think all of us reused, and that's why they're, at least in the class of graduates I was involved in, you know, there's a large number of highly successful people that have had very good impacts in their fields.
And you know, I'm wondering, can we as universities teach entrepreneurism and this entrepreneur spirit, or is it something basically that you're born with?
Well, nobody can teach how to become Steve Jobs anymore. You know, Steve Jobs came along, what, 130 years after Thomas Edison's great inventions, and the comparison is fair. Greatest inventor / entrepreneur in the history of the U.S. was Thomas Edison and Steve Jobs. Who's tied for first? That's style points. So that's just, you know, if you look at that, you'd say, okay, it's just. You can't teach Mozart to play the piano at four. He either does or he doesn't. So, but the standards are not the Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs doesn't get there if there weren't an army of predecessor entrepreneurs that created the silicon industry and the chemical industry before it and the software industry and the design services industry and the crystal pulling industry. Without silicon integrated circuits, Steve Jobs he went to Reed College. He could have ended up a liberal arts professor. But he didn't. But there was a really great TV show back in the 70s on KPBS called, I think it was called Connections or something like that. And it literally said, how, you know, they would start out, how does a Roman chariot lead to the moon landing on, you know, in 1969? And they would show how this invention led to this invention, which led to this invention, which led to this invention. How did the Black Plague lead to the modern digital computer? Turns out there's probably 1,000 connections, but they follow one. And so everybody, Peregrine, we didn't invent silicon on sapphire. I try to make that point emphatically clear. If Peregrine is counted as a success, we just stood on the shoulders of not only the people who were successful, Hal Manassovitz, who invented SOS, but all those companies that failed. They told us what lines of research not to pursue. And so, you know, one of the things that I firmly believe is that entrepreneurs, their number one job is to keep the company alive long enough to get lucky. And I don't care if you look at any successful company, Steve Jobs just happened to go to high school with Wozniak. What if Joe Blow had gone with Wozniak and Steve Jobs was homeschooled? I don't know, it's the whole chaos and butterfly theory of evolution, right? So if you look at why is entrepreneurism important, it isn't. You get a Steve Jobs statistically. Steve Jobs, Sergey Brin at Google, Gordon Moore at Intel, they came all from the United States. All of those that I just named were in Silicon Valley. Why is Silicon Valley where it is? Because it's halfway between Stanford and Berkeley. And Stanford does not teach, publish, Stanford teach, go start a company. You go sit in, they just, your job in learning this stuff is to go start a company. That's your goal. So I think, can you teach how to raise money? Yeah, those things are the nuts and bolts. But I think a university can, from the beginning, mold minds to say, your job is not to publish a paper. I mean, that's fine if you want to be a, you know, we need more professors, we need smarter professors. But if what universities do, if 80% of their graduates turn into university professors, that's just a self-sustaining, closed-off system. Where's the net value other than creating teachers? Which is fine, but you need to say, okay, I need 20% of these people to be teachers, and I need the other 80% to try to start a company, because only one of five of those is even going to make it. So they now have to create 50 jobs just to break even, just to pay the professor's salary that taught them, and to lose all the money that the entrepreneurs put into the failing companies. So jobs, noise, more, the great entrepreneurs, and there's a huge list of them. Those people came from a vast vat of entrepreneurial attempts, most of which failed, and that's all okay. But so it's almost, it's inculcating into the students, what are you going to do with this education when you're done? Whether a PhD, master's, graduate, or dropout, like, oh yeah, Steve Jobs, like, oh yeah, Bill Gates. And what? Gordon Moore got a PhD, ended up one of the greatest entrepreneurs of all time. So it still boils down to selling as a important goal to be an entrepreneur.
You were talking about inculcating this for students, and you've just hosted a team of interns. So yeah. Tell us a little bit about how that went and what your experience was.
We've done interns before. We're big believers in interns. We've gotten some very, very good long-term students, employees out of that student population. This one worked even better because I think the current Jacobs School really has done a great job of proposing this team program. I've forgotten the acronym for it, but it's basically where we get two or three students all working on a similar project. The biggest problem with interns is I've never been in a high-tech company trying to grow rapidly that everybody wasn't overworked. They don't have time for where's the bathroom? How do I turn on my computer? Where do I get a password? Why can't I get access to this file? People, especially, if you put that on junior people, then it just looks like more work, and they blame their managers. If you put it on the managers, they don't have the time. So I thought the way the team, the program that we used, and I've forgotten its acronym, worked out really well because there was a very good screening process that allowed us to get people we thought would apply for the projects that we had, and then they could rely on each other for how do I find a password, how do I get logged in, where are the donuts on Friday, that kind of, just the little stuff that eventually doesn't sound like much, but it makes the student feel like, the guy I'm supposed to, he's on travel for 2 weeks and I can't get my computer turned on, they waste 2 weeks. This way they can, there's enough interns, they can figure it out together. So it worked out very well. We had some in our quality department doing engineering work. We had, I think, two or three in our marketing department. They actually worked on something that we wanted to get done and just couldn't get to. They did a great job. So we will definitely, I kind of set it up at the company and said, and our CFO supported it by saying all of the costs are off budget, so you don't have to pay for them this year, so that we could get it started. But eventually it has to be self-sustaining, where the managers, wow, I got all that for only this much from you. If I hired a full-time employee, it would have been pi times more than that. So it worked out really well. I think it's a really well-run program.
Now, I'm wondering what advice you'd give to an undergraduate or a graduate student who's trying to become somebody that has leadership skills and, somebody who, in the long run would be someone like you.
Well, that's I'll assume that's somewhat correct, but you know, there's some things that you're just natural at. Mark Bergner is very uncomfortable with a microphone. He doesn't like public speaking. He's a good communicator, but not in a forum like this. His brain works differently than mine. We recognize that was a yin and a yang that we needed. So, you know, in many ways, you can almost see it in American society. Most young people today can name the top 10 actors and actresses, but can't name the vice president or a single senator. Why? Because it's saturation advertising. The person who's comfortable in front of the microphone often gets probably a disproportionate amount of the recognition. So that's an important skill for an entrepreneur. If you can't speak to groups, then you need to find somebody. Wozniak couldn't. Jobs wasn't the engineer. Jobs was the voice. He was the vision and he was the articulator. But that whole idea of information has no value until it's in motion. The iPhone was the best kept secret and it was worthless until bam, and then it changed the world as soon as it was available. Until then, if Jobs had killed it, it would have had no impact on the industry other than Apple's earnings went down because they wasted some R&D dollars. So, you know, I would say there is part of, the biggest part of kind of organizational leadership to me is communication skills. And that is to some degree, you're either comfortable or you're not. And it's, I mean, Toastmasters and all that, but I mean, you go to Toastmasters and they put six people up and you can say, five of those, they're never, I'd like to open with a joke. How many, what's the difference between, you know, oh my God, sit down. You know, sit down. Go find somebody to do your, you know, you may be brilliant, but let somebody else do the talking. But everyone can lead in their own area of expertise. Mark Bergner, if he says something technically to this day, the company stops and listens. That's where he's the lead. He is a technically, you know, he's an innovative technical leader for us. But he's just not a speaker. So the key to leading is stick to what you know. And if you have a passion for it, you'll probably do pretty well. You know, if you're doing this because you want to make a lot of money, most entrepreneurs who start a company to make a lot of money don't do either. They don't start good companies, and they usually don't make much money. That's a bad reason. There's a lot easier ways to make a lot of money. Go work for an investment bank.